The word covenant is most often used in religious circles in reference to one particular and specific covenant, a set of reciprocal promises made between the Hebrew God Yahweh and the patriarch of the three great monotheistic traditions. It was a guy called Abram, whom the story says God rechristened Abraham, the patriarch of all of them. And I think there's a little dance music playing somewhere in the sanctuary. Now, what you might not have heard is the story I'm about to tell you. Because it so happens in this story that Abraham was not God's first choice after all. God started off, you see, with another dude altogether. The Almighty first went to another fairly wealthy, largely responsible, pretty decent guy named Serug, and God said, "Serug, leave your country and your neighbors and your family and go to a land that I will show you, and I will make of you a great nation, and I will bless you, and I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. All who bless you will be blessed, and all who curse you will be cursed, and through you all the nations of the earth shall be blessed." And Serug said, "Who are you again?" And God said, "God." And Serug said, "What will you give me?" And God said, "I just told you." And Serug said, "No, you do not understand. I'm not interested in moving anywhere or doing anything just so that my great-great-grandchildren will be a great nation. I want to know what's in this field for me right now. And maybe if you showered me with a blessing or two up front, I might be convinced. How about giving me all the money in the world and the kingship of all the lands? What do you say, God?" But God said nothing. And Serug said, "All right, let's be reasonable. I will go wherever you want for most of the money in the world and the kingship of just, say, the five largest countries. How about that?" But God said nothing. And that was the last Serug ever heard from God. Now, for those of you who have bravely decided to trust me when I say things about the world's scriptural traditions, do not go trying to look that one up. It is not, in fact, in there. It's part of a story written by Mark Gelman. But I wish it were there, because in addition to making me laugh, it says, I think, some important things about the nature of a covenant. Covenant is the theme we have for this month here at Brew, and it was originally a form of treaty making in the ancient Near East. A covenant was a set of mutual expectations. In a covenantal agreement, each party gained something significant in exchange for their participation, and offered something significant in exchange as well. It is an agreement of mutual commitment and mutual benefit, and both parties need the agreement of the other in order to progress, to survive, to make money, or whatever it is they wanted to do. In time, covenant was adopted by the Hebrew people as an ideal description of those people's relationship with God. It was a sort of partnership in which both parties understood what was agreed upon, both parties needed each other, and both parties took up the challenge of fulfilling the covenant expectations. It was in this way not a one-sided agreement, but a truly reciprocal pact that put the people into relationship with God and with one another. It was a deeply held set of promises, the deepest promises that the Hebrews could make. Hence the description sometimes used of the Hebrew people as the covenant people. They were the people of the promise. Those who had worked out a mutual set of promises with their monotheistic God, and they were the people called to live out the implications of that promise. Now, fast forward a couple of thousand years or so, to about 400 years or so, give or take, when folks whom history has come to call the Puritans itching under the control of Roman Catholicism and Anglicanism in Europe and in England, These people felt that they were operating under a particular hierarchical structure that imposed a certain kind of religion on them and demanded much from them. They had lots of complaints that we won't go into. And they had lots of issues. But they did fundamentally feel like the relationship between God and God's people was hampered by the hierarchy of the medieval Christian church, and they wanted to get out from under it. So, they started their own thing. Initially in secret, the Puritan separatists, guided by their understanding of God and their complaints about the Church of England, they gathered into their own underground congregations, and they created what they called covenants. These covenants were essentially the constitution adapted by members of the congregation. The covenant was what was agreed to when a person joined the separatist congregation and what both God and one's brethren expected of you. It so happens, covenant of a congregation in Scrooby, England became a starting point for the covenant of a bunch of folks who got on a ship called the Mayflower, bound eventually for Plymouth, Massachusetts, where stands the oldest existing congregation of any kind in the United States. Some of you also know happens to be the oldest congregation in the Unitarian Universalist Association. The Puritans saw themselves as a people who make a covenant with one another and with God, a mutual agreement that bound them in relationship. Not a specific doctrinal statement, but this covenant became the core of the Puritan church. And in time, when the Puritans' ancestors, some of them, became increasingly more theologically liberal, an adapted form of that covenant idea became the center of American Unitarianism. And so we stand here today. A congregation that is not united by any sort of creed or doctrinal test, but that is, at least implicitly, bound by some sort of covenant, some set of mutual agreements. We are not a creedal congregation or an orthodox movement. There really isn't a set of uniform beliefs among us. But some would argue that there is a particular way of being that is mutually expected, mutually beneficial. There are promises made here, whether or not we say them aloud, and those promises are the core of who we are. As Unitarian Universalist scholar Alice Blair Wesley has said, when you sign the membership book of Covenanted Free Church, you are not signing any list of propositions such as make up a creed, I believe this and that, and maybe other and 411 things. No, to join a free church is to sign a promise that might sound simple. It should sound simple, but we really mean it, to keep covenant with the other members, into intimate relationships, to live with all the integrity you and they can together muster. No simple matter, this one. No simple matter. In fact, it is a fairly large commitment. A covenant, as Wesley describes it, is not a throwaway thing, something that has a claim on you, that asks something profound of you, and that offers something profound in return. Notice that throughout the little history of covenant I just gave, at least from Abraham onward, the idea of covenant always refers to a particular relationship between some people and God. It is, in this way, a vertical covenant, uniting folks with the Almighty. This is true even for early American Unitarians who saw their covenant with God as a direct, unmediated link to that cut out the middleman of church hierarchy and put them right there in relationship with the big guy himself. But their covenant was also a horizontal covenant, connecting people to each other. It went both ways, across the community, connecting people together, and up in a vertical direction, connecting the church to God. When you signed a covenant in the early American church, you signed on to a particular way of being, both with God and with your neighbor, and the two came hand in hand. These days, in Unitarian Universalist congregations, including our own, the word covenant is commonly used in reference to all sorts of contracts and agreements, both implicit and explicit. And yet, few of us would say that our communal covenant as a congregation is primarily between ourselves and God. While as individuals, many of us make our deepest promises to the God of our understanding, as a group, we have, in a sense, canned the whole vertical dimension of the covenant. We've eliminated one half of the two dimensions that gave rise to the whole concept of covenant, choosing the horizontal connections we have with one another over the vertical connection with God. And this is not a bad thing. We rather like it. It's an adaptation of a historical concept that fits our current theology and values. An adaptation in this case is a good thing. We've taken a concept that meant one thing 400 years ago and molded it into something that's relevant for us today. And yet, even if I wholly agree that our covenant as a community is not with a divine force that makes deals with us, I'm not quite ready to say that as a congregation, the only thing we are covenanted to be in relationship with is ourselves. To whom do we make our deepest promises? Who are we in relationship with? Who needs us as much as we need them, and whom are we willing to sacrifice for? If the Puritans and the Hebrews were willing to sacrifice and work and labor and risk for God, who are we willing to sacrifice and work and labor and risk for? It would be easy to say that we are willing to do these things for one another. To say that when we join a congregation such as this one, we enter into covenant primarily with the other members of our congregation. In this scenario, the church provides some things, right? Hopefully, halfway decent worship services, fellowship, community, friends, comfort, safety in the midst of the storm. And each member provides something as well. Energy, volunteerism, your voice in the shared democracy, your coins in the community coffers. It is a mutually beneficial relationship between each member of the congregation and all the others. And everybody gets something in it for them. It's not a bad deal. In fact, it's the sort of covenant, a covenant in which all benefit now, that is exactly the kind of thing Serug was asking for in our story. Remember Serug? He said, "But what's in it for me?" And God said, "I just told you." And Serug said, "No, not what's in it for my children's children. In it for me." And God left old Serug there in the desert and went and found Abraham. What Serug failed to see was the fact that the covenant was not just between himself and the Almighty. It was between himself, his community, and the Almighty. It wasn't a two-way covenant, but a three-way covenant between a person, the world, and the Lord. And even if we are no longer as a community in direct covenant with the Almighty, who do we make promises to? Why do we exist? What is the relationship at the core of our being? I'd say our covenant, our set of central promises, is not just or even primarily between us. We don't, or at least shouldn't, exist mostly to make promises to each other. Our covenant, like the covenant God offered Abraham, is a multidimensional covenant. In our case, it exists at least between ourselves, our community, and our ancestors. We promise to uphold certain values not just because we ourselves will benefit from them, but because we are called by a hurting world and a waiting history to live out our highest ideals in service to commitments we might never see the payoff of. Reverend Burton Carley once said that covenants are intergenerational in that they connect past, present, and future. It is a partnership between those who have come before us in our tradition, those who now guard, nurture, expand, and pass on that tradition, and those who will inherit that tradition by choice or by birth. And I would add, our covenants are radiating. reaching out from this place into this town, this county, our neighborhoods, our nation. We exist to make deep promises to ourselves, to our history, and to our neighbors. We commit to certain things and promise certain things so that we can reap rich rewards and can in turn offer rich rewards to others. I don't think we necessarily need a vertical dimension to our covenant, but I do think we need a radiating dimension. A set of promises that doesn't stop here. If being a UU means anything, it means we are in relationship with each other so that we can in turn be in better relationship to the world around us. That world, like the people next to us in these pews, has a right to demand some things of us. A certain way of being, perhaps a certain way of caring. We start here, in covenant with each other, connected by a way of being that lets us know each and every one of us is important, lets us know that we're safe, that we're welcome, that reminds us we need not think alike to love alike. And we take that covenant outward to ever greater commitments in relationship to the world around us, commitments we are honored to participate in. We are not, as they say, a creedal church. You can't say in a general sense, what do Unitarian Universalists believe? Because we're not united by a particular belief. We're united by a way of being together. And I hope a way of being in the world. A set of promises that both rewards us with fulfillment and challenges us with commitment. What do you promise? And to whom? That is the heart of the covenant church. Not what do you believe, but what do you promise, and to whom?